Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
The questions and answers for Attorney General nominee Jeff Sessions. But first, to our opinion and commentary segment. As Republicans move quickly in Congress to appeal the Affordable Care Act, Cornell economics professor Robert Frank warns that there may be political, quote, hell to pay. His op-ed appears in the New York Times. He joins us this morning from Ithaca, New York. And Professor, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
My pleasure, Carrie.
It sounds like you believe Republicans had better bone up on the economic theory behind loss aversion. What is it, and why do they need to know about it?
Yes, it's a very interesting concept. It's one of the most robust empirical findings of the last 30 or 40 years in economics. And what it says basically is that a loss of a given amount hurts you much more than a gain of that same amount helps you, or at least psychologically, that's true. And the magnitudes are big. If we're talking about a trivial item, let's say a coffee mug, what you're willing to pay to acquire one is about half as much as they would have to give you to get you to part with one that you already own. So if you have it, it's much more valuable to you than if you don't have it. And I think that simple concept really explains why the Affordable Care Act was so hard to get passed in the first place. And then it goes on to help us understand why if anybody tries to repeal it, it will be much, much harder to do than it was even to get it passed.
Professor, let me ask you this. How does the idea, the psychology of loss aversion, how is it influenced by a perception that even though you have it, you're paying too much for it? It's costing you too much, because you know that there are people that benefit from the ACA, but their perspective is it costs too much money.
Yeah, everybody wants to pay as little as possible for whatever they get. That's been on the table. There's nothing new about that finding. People complain about high prices routinely. And so if the subsidies were larger, people would be happier about that. They'd also be less happy about the fact that somebody's paying taxes in order to pay for the larger subsidies. What's new here is that if you've enacted a policy that provides a benefit, that's what the ACA does, and then you try to take it away from people, that kindles this reaction that's so dramatically asymmetric. Mm-hmm. They didn't fight hard to get the health care coverage in the first place, but now that they have it, somebody proposes to take it away. The magnitudes, when it's something important, not a coffee mug, but something intimately related to your health and safety, the ratio is something like 500 times as much. And there's a very interesting experiment that kind of illustrates the asymmetry. I can describe it to you if there's a moment.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
So what the experiment does, it takes you when you have a good health outcome already, how much would you be willing to pay to keep it? The other side of the experiment says if you don't have a good health outcome, how much would you be willing to pay to get it? And so in the second case, you're asked to imagine that you've been exposed to a rare disease. It's going to kill you with one chance in 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
There's a drug that we'll give you that will prevent the disease from killing you. Remember, it's only 1 in 1,000 chance that it will kill you.
Okay.
How much would you pay for this drug? And, you know, think about that. You would obviously value having the drug. You've lost your good health. You've been exposed to the disease. How much would you pay to acquire the protection offered by that drug? People on average say about $2,000.
And that's interesting.
That's consistent with other findings about the value of health and safety. But then to go in the other direction, people are asked to imagine that they've been offered a chance to participate in an experiment whereby they would be exposed to the same disease. It would give them a 1 in 1,000 chance of dying.
Mm-hmm.
There's no cure for it, but their participation in the program will help lead to scientific knowledge that might eventually produce a vaccine, not in time to help them. How much would we have to pay you to get you to participate in that experiment? And there the answer is, on average, about $500,000.
Oh,
so
wow.
2,000 in one case, 500,000 in the other
what
case.
What does that tell you?
So, all right. So having coverage under the ACA is like not having been exposed to this microbe yet. How much, is like asking you how much would you be willing to pay to avoid being a volunteer in this experiment. That's going to be a very, very big number. And we don't have dollar numbers to worry about. It's going to be how loud are you going to scream if they take it away from
Professor,
you.
But, Professor, I think you also know that part of the pushback on the Affordable Care Act is people saying, sure, I have all this coverage, and in some nebulous time somewhere in the future, I might need it. But right now, I'm paying for stuff that I'm not using. How does that fit into economic theory?
You know, that's the story of insurance in every domain. Do you have fire insurance for your house? I'm guessing you do.
Mm-hmm.
You're paying for insurance this year that I'm also guessing you're hoping that you're not going to use this year. You'll be glad you have it if your house burns down. But, you know, insurance is a transaction where you have to incur a small cost now in the interest of preventing a really ruinous loss in the future.
Do you think there is something about health insurance and health care that causes people to think differently than they do about their fire insurance?
You know, I think most people or many people would not buy fire insurance if their mortgage company didn't require them to do that. No, I think people, if they think they can save a dollar by not buying something that they don't immediately need, are going to be tempted to do that. And it's the same with health insurance. But the kind of insurance you really should buy is insurance against the losses that you just couldn't bear to deal with on your own. And none of us could carry the loss of a burned down house, or few of us could, and even fewer could carry the cost of a catastrophic illness. That's why we should have insurance against these things.
It's interesting because, as you know, the balance of the risk pool has been so important to this, and that risk pool for the ACA has been out of balance. There weren't enough younger and healthier people signing up for the ACA to keep the costs under control. I know I'm really minimizing the whole economic theory here, but what you've just said is a lot of these so-called young invincibles don't think about the reality of the possibility that they could be in a car accident tomorrow and need
right.
all of that catastrophic coverage. Because what happens is they say, but right now I'm spending $120 a month for insurance that I don't think I'm ever going to need.
Right. Yeah. And that is short-sighted. But that's the reason that the ACA has the mandate provision. What we want in insurance in the health domain is that it cover pre-existing conditions. If it doesn't cover pre-existing conditions, then people who are sick can't get insurance at a price any human being could afford. And so if we want to require companies to cover those conditions, we have to have a mandate that people buy insurance, because otherwise you could just wait until you got sick and then buy insurance. Why
mm-hmm.
would any rational, healthy person buy insurance before he got sick? It would be silly. What if you could buy fire insurance after your house burned down?
Right.
You know.
Professor Robert Frank is with us this morning from Cornell University, where he is an economist. And we're talking this morning about how he puts loss aversion theory to work against this debate around the Affordable Care Act. And we're having a discussion that, of course, brings in the politics and the perceptions that individuals who have either signed up for the ACA or been unhappy with their health care coverage are feeling, and then how that's playing into the political debate. While we're talking about politics, Professor, by the way, you think, you're convinced that the reason the GOP has struggled to come up with a plan to replace the Affordable Care Act is precisely for the reasons that we're talking about here. Why?
There are three basic features of Obamacare. One is the requirement that the companies have to cover people with pre-existing conditions. Everybody's in favor of that. Incoming President Trump says he is determined to keep that requirement. Then there are the mandates, whose logic we just discussed. If you are going to try to cover pre-existing conditions, you need a broad pool that consists mainly of healthy people, or else the private companies can't afford to pay for the people with pre-existing conditions. And if you're going to require people to buy health insurance, then you've got to offer subsidies for the people who couldn't afford it on their own. What logic would there be in saying you have to buy something if you can't afford it?
Uh-huh.
And so those are the three basic features of the Affordable Care Act. And you cannot have a health coverage program of the sort we're talking about here unless you have each of those three positions.
You know, let me just say this. I think that explains why we don't know if this is going to work, but I think it explains why President-elect Trump talks about keeping the measure that allows you to keep your 26-year-old and below on your health insurance and the, as you've just said, the pre-existing conditions. You're saying you can't keep all the good stuff and make this work economically. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. And you talked about people being unhappy that they're paying more for premiums than they want to. One way to solve that problem would be to make the subsidies bigger. But no one in the camp proposing to repeal Obamacare has proposed making the subsidies bigger. They want to eliminate subsidies. So, yeah, I think they were able to be bitterly critical of Obamacare for 7 years and say, we're going to repeal it. Indeed, they voted scores of times to repeal it.
Right.
But now the question is, if you repeal it, what's going to happen? People are going to suffer big, big losses in the form of giving up benefits they care about that is going to create an explosive loss aversion reaction, and that's going to bite really hard.
It's going to be interesting.
They're becoming aware of that just now.
Professor, one quick question here off of Twitter from a listener who says, why not treat health insurance like fire insurance and use it for catastrophes only for all ages, pre-existing or not? Would that work?
Yeah, if I were in the market myself for health insurance, that's exactly what I would buy. I have a good salary and good employer-provided insurance, but if Cornell didn't provide me with insurance, I would look for a policy like that. But if you're a low-income individual, then virtually any significant health problem is catastrophic. You just can't deal with even the modest kind of health problem that people have these days, given the prices of health care. So basically, I think you need to provide pretty deep coverage if you're going to deal with the problems that many millions of Americans actually face.
Professor, a pleasure to hear your theory about loss aversion how it's going to apply to the Affordable Care Act. Thank you.
Yeah, nice to talk with you, Carrie.
Robert Frank is a Cornell economics professor and wrote an opinion piece for the New York Times about what we've been talking about, the Affordable Care Act, this morning.